The Insurance and Banking Subcommittee will come to order. Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair DeSegley.
Here.
Vice Chair Fetterhoff.
Here.
Ranking Democratic Member Wilhite.
Here.
Representatives Barnaby.
Here.
Brown. Driscoll. Fabricio.
Here.
Jill Lombardo.
Here.
Hague.
Here.
Hans Schofsky.
Here.
Coster.
Here.
Maggard is excused. Rayner is excused. Smith.
Here.
Snyder. Tant.
Here.
Toledo.
Here.
Zika.
Present.
Okay, thank you. Let the record reflect that a quorum is present. Before we begin, just a reminder to please silence your electronic devices. I want to welcome you back, members. Today we have four bills on our agenda. I want to say welcome back to Representative Barnaby. We miss you. It was very, very good to see you today, sir. Welcome back.
Good to be back. Thanks, everybody.
All right, so with that, members, we will take up House Bill 743, information submitted by insurers, by Representative Fabrizio, and as you know, Yogi Berra once said, it's deja vu all over again. So, Representative, you are recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Chair. Members, HB 7043 saves from repeal a public record exemption for anti-fraud investigative information submitted by insurers to the Department of Financial Services. And that's the bill.
Okay, thank you, members. Any questions? Any questions on the bill? Seeing no questions, any public testimony? No public testimony. Members, any debate? Any debate on the bill? Seeing no debate, Representative Fabrizio, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Wave close.
Okay, having waived close, Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair DeSegley.
Yes.
Vice Chair Fetterhoff.
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Wilhite.
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby.
Yes.
Brown.
Yes.
Driscoll. Fabricio.
Yes.
Jill Lombardo. Hague.
Yes.
Hans Schofsky.
Yes.
Oster.
Yes.
Maggard is excused. Rayner is excused. Smith?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Toledo? Zika?
Yes.
Okay, thank you, members. By your vote, House Bill 7043 will be reported favorably. Okay, members, now we are on to, we'll take up House Bill 7045, Information on Financial Institutions, Affiliated International Trust Entities, and Qualified Limited Service Affiliates, by Representative Fabrizio. Representative, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Chair. Members, HB 7045 saves from repeal public record exemptions for the personal identifying information of customers, shareholders, or members of international trust entities and confidential documents provided by other regulatory bodies that are held by the Office of Financial Regulation. Members, that is the bill.
Okay, thank you. Members, any questions on the bill? Representative Honchowski, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Fabrizio, how many bills have you presented in front of this committee this session, and what number bill is this?
You are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I believe I've presented probably six bills.
Any further questions? Any further questions? Representative Zika. Recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair. We just need a recount on the statement.
All right, any questions on the bill as presented? Any questions on the bill? Okay. Any public testimony? No public testimony. Members, we're in debate. In debate on the bill. Any debate? Any debate? Seeing none, Representative Fabrizio, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Wave close.
Okay. Representative Fabrizio, having waived close on his bill, Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair DeSegley.
Yes.
Vice Chair Fetterhoff.
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Wilhite.
Yes.
Representatives Barnaby.
Yes.
Brown.
Yes.
Driscoll. Fabrizio.
Yes.
Jill Lombardo. Hague.
Yes.
Hans Schofsky.
Yes.
Coster.
Yes.
Maggard is excused. Rayner is excused. Smith.
Yes.
Snyder.
Yes.
Tant.
Yes.
Toledo. Zika?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Members, by your vote, House Bill 7045 will be reported favorably. Congratulations once again. Okay, members, we have two more bills on our agenda, and we're going to take an informal recess. Okay, members, we will call this meeting back to order. Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair DeSegli.
Here.
Vice Chair Fedahoff.
Here.
Ranking Democratic Member Wilhite.
Here.
Representatives Barnaby.
Here.
Brown.
Here.
Driscoll. Fabricio.
Here.
Jill Lombardo. Haig.
Here.
Ponchofsky.
Here.
Foster.
Here.
Maggard. Excused. Rayner. Excused. Smith.
Here.
Snyder.
Here.
Tant.
Here.
Toledo.
Here.
Zika.
Present.
Quorum is present, sir.
All righty. Quorum is present. Thank you, members, for that. Next up, we will take up PCS for House Bill 425, Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder Benefits and Peer Support Programs, by Representative Fisher. Representative, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I apologize for being a few minutes behind. They kept me over in the Senate building. It's just a little bit of a hike to get here, so thanks for holding on. A St. Louis University study found that more than half of the correction officers reported having post-traumatic stress disorder. Comparatively, the rate of PTSD among adults in the general population is 6.8%, while 35.3% of police officers have experienced PTSD symptoms. It's natural to ask, should we show our support for our law enforcement officers and correctional officers who make sacrifice every day so that we can stay safe? Should we show the support for them that they deserve? Well, that's exactly what my bill does. It provides PTSD workers' compensation benefits to correctional officers and correctional probation officers in Florida, including those that are employed part-time. This bill also builds upon previous legislation by Representative Wilhite by expanding PTSD benefits to part-time and auxiliary law enforcement officers, since all of these professions are at dramatically higher risk of having PTSD. Law enforcement, correctional, and correctional probation officers diagnosed by licensed psychiatrists with PTSD due to specified events they've encountered in their professions will be eligible for workers' compensation benefits under this legislation. The bill also clarifies that at least 1 hour of educational training related to mental health awareness, prevention, mitigation, and treatment must be provided annually to first responders. The required educational training must also include, but is not limited to, peer support programs, mental health awareness training provided by licensed mental health practitioners specialized in PTSD, and suicide prevention programs. This legislation also expands the time frame during which law enforcement, correctional officers, and correctional probation officers may qualify for PTSD benefits to 52 weeks after the incident or upon a diagnosis of PTSD, whichever is later. The first responders' personal involvement in the qualifying events must be also documented in the report maintained by the employing agency. Now, I know some people have said, well, this sounds very expensive. And the Department of Financial Services, the Division of Workers' Compensation, review the data to identify the claims that have been included in reports of injury or illness related to PTSD since Senate Bill 376 went into effect in October 1st of 2018, which provided full-time law enforcement officers with PTSD benefits. Although the division is unable to provide the exact cost, they estimate the fiscal impact of Senate Bill 376 was about $1.6 million to date. So 3 years, $1.6 million over time. Further, these claims are paid by private insurers, self-insurers, or risk management funds. So this bill will not require a direct appropriation from the state. These are not just faceless numbers. These are people's mothers and fathers, sons and daughters, their grandmothers and grandfathers. And that's the bill.
Thank you, Representative. Members, any questions on the bill? Representative Tant, you recognize a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, you and I texted about this. I'm concerned about leaving out the dispatch 911 operators, and wanted to know if you knew why they were being left out in this draft.
You're recognized.
Thank you for the question. The intention of this bill is not to leave anybody out. The intention of this bill is to add other qualifying employees into it and also expand the benefits for the current people who qualify.
Members, any further questions? Any further questions? Yep, you're recognized for follow-up.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Chair. On page 17 of the bill, they say that first responders, including 911 safety telecommunicators, are eligible for peer support for first responders, but they're not elsewhere. So that's, I just want to continue to work with you on that. You and I discussed that, you know, we're kind of on the same page. We're concerned about these folks. But I do want to, and we're defined in one section, but not in the other, and I want to see what we can do about getting
there. Is there a question in there, Representative?
I just want to see, can we get there from here? So that's a question.
You're recognized if you'd like to answer that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is my last legislative session, most likely. But it is something that I think deserves discussion and deserves debate. And so it's something that I'm willing to lend my support to. I've done it, you know, lended support in the past to it and willing to lend support to it in the future. But I think with this legislation, the cost is always of concern. So it's almost like you have to take small bites out of the apple to kind of move it along.
Okay, members, any further questions? Ranking Member Wilhite, you recognize a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Representative, for this bill. You mentioned $1.9 million, I think, since 2018. Do you have any idea or a rough number of how many first responders have taken advantage of the workers' comp benefit since it was enacted?
You're recognized.
It's $1.6 million, and I'm not sure the number of claims, but I'll follow up with you after.
Okay.
Afterwards, and then the number.
Follow up.
And then I don't expect you to have exact numbers, but even since 2018 when this bill was enacted, have first responders still been taking their life been taking their lives due to the effects of the job potentially since then?
You're recognized.
Unfortunately, they have. And while we all try to do what we can to help them get the support that they need, the reality is the way the current laws are set up is they're not getting all the support that they need. This bill doesn't fix everything, but it definitely moves us in the right direction to provide more benefits. One of the biggest problems with the number of claims, and that's, I don't have the number exactly since it filed, but one of the complaints that we heard is that the timing of it, the 52 weeks since the incident happened, by the time somebody gets diagnosed, it may be past or outside of that window, and so they don't qualify for the benefits. This will help to correct that issue.
Thank you.
Thank you. Members, any further questions? Any further questions? Okay, seeing none, we're on to public testimony. Lisa Henning, Florida State Fraternal Order of Police. Thank you for being here. You are recognized.
Good afternoon. I'd like to thank the chairman for bringing this bill forward and the sponsor of the bill for doing such a great job and working with everyone and negotiating the issue. I want to emphasize to everyone that the one thing that everyone forgets when you're dealing with corrections is that these law enforcement officers are inside of a building as if they are in jail for at least half of their life as well. So they have some added stressors, and they don't get to leave, and they have to work in a human petri dish. So I want to make sure that everyone knows that they are out there, they are legitimately law enforcement officers, and they are important to our community and our public safety. And I wanted to also let everyone know that after the original PTSD bill went through, Jacksonville Duval County negotiated with their local police union and their corrections in order to get coverage for their corrections officers. And of the approximately 650 corrections officers that they have in a 3.5 year time period, they have only had one file claimed, and it was denied. So the fear factor of there being a lot of people massively jumping on the bandwagon is just false, especially within this industry. We look forward to working with anyone, and if anyone has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Representative Smith, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair. And just to follow up, is in the Duval County, in that negotiation with their local, were 911 dispatchers a part of that negotiation? Do you have any data on that?
I don't have be happy to get with you on it.
Through the chair, please. Can you repeat that? I didn't mean to interrupt you. We're going to go through the chair. So you're recognized. Can you please repeat the answer? Thank you.
No, sir. I don't have the information on that, but I will call, and I should be able to get it for you in about the next 10 minutes.
Any further questions? Thank you so much for being here.
Sure thing.
Appreciate it. Okay, Matt Puckett, Florida Police Benevolent Association. Waving in support. Thank you for being here. Kimberly Powell, Consolidated Dispatch Agency. She is, come on up. Come on down. You are recognized.
Thank you. My name again is Kimberly Powell. I'm a mental health provider, and I wanted to thank you for the questions that you asked regarding 911 telecommunication operators. I am, as I mentioned, a mental health counselor, and I've had the opportunity to work with survivors of tragedy, with law enforcement officers, and now in a role of working with 911 emergency operators. And the commonality between all of them is their exposure to trauma, repeated exposure to trauma. So I'm here just to support the inclusion of 911 operators in the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you for being here. Okay. Okay, we've got David Odom, Consolidated Dispatch Agency. You are recognized.
Good afternoon. My name is David Odom. I'm the director of the Consolidated Dispatch Agency here in Tallahassee. And first of all, I'd say thank you for bringing the bill forward. Unique perspective here. I've done 28 years in law enforcement, as ascended to the rank of major, and recently I was asked to be the director of Consolidated Dispatch. It's an organization that has 107 employees, and the similarity is what I've seen in the field comparatively to what I've seen behind the phone is very similar. It's really disturbing in sense here, and I know we've talked, the question was asked about, you know, which one do we go first? Do we just try to grab corrections and take a little small bite at the apple, and then we come and grab another group later on? It's easy to say that, but the reality is, though, is that we lose track of some of these folks. There's an appreciation that gets lost here. Without us being able to do the job that we do in the field, without those folks behind the radio and taking those calls, and I'll tell you just a short little synopsis of what I'm talking about, is just a couple of months ago, an incident happened in a neighboring county, and the young lady's on the phone, and she's screaming in the phone that my baby's dad has got a gun, and repeatedly saying this, and our communications officer is diligently trying to get help, trying to identify where the location is, trying to get the right resources to him. And as she is screaming the phone, the operator hears the gunshot. And then next thing out of her mouth is that he has shot me. My baby's daddy has shot me. And then you hear a gurgling and she passes away with our operator on the phone with her. Now, for our operator, there's no closure to that incident. And what happens is responders show up on scene, law enforcement's there, they see it, they start trying to mitigate, and then all he hears is the phone go dead. And his question is, what? What happened? You know, what's going on? What happened? And there's no residual, because as soon as the phone hangs up, 30 seconds later, the phone rings again. And it's another person on 911 calling for help. And so there was no transition. Where was the time for them to decompress to understand what's happening? That's one example, one call, one city, one community. That's happening every day in this community across the state. And we have to own that. And to say that the person behind the radio or the person on the other end of the phone is not as valued is troubling. I have 107 positions. They have 25 vacancies. 25% of the organization is not there because I lose so many through attrition of stress and pressure. I hired Kim Powell, a licensed mental health counselor, recognizing the need immediately inside our facility to have someone there 40 hours a week every day engaging with our staff so they fully understand that they have the support of me and this community. That's a daily event that has to happen. I appreciate the law enforcement side of it. When we talk about PTSD, I was in a shooting, I was hit by a car, all that has happened, and the support from the community is overwhelming, but we lose sight of corrections officers, we lose sight of communications operators, we lose sight of that. It's easy to look at the uniform, and to see the visibility, but there's a lot of folks behind the phone and behind the scenes here doing amazing work here that we just cannot lose sight of. So in all due respect, I support the bill, but please, I'm asking you to expand the bill, quite honestly, to include the 911 operators here in this conversation. Take any questions.
Members, any questions? Any questions? I want to thank you for your testimony, and we hear you loud and clear.
Thank you, sir.
Thank
you. Appreciate it.
Okay, we've got Kelly O'Dair Wilson, Second Alarm Project. You are recognized.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair, Representative Wilhite, and members of the subcommittee for allowing me the opportunity to speak with you this afternoon. I'm Dr. Kelly O'Dair Wilson. I hold a PhD in social work. I'm a faculty member with the Institute of Public Health at Florida A&M University and the founder and director of the Second Alarm Project. We're a comprehensive, evidence-based behavioral health program for first responders and their family members, primarily with fire service and EMS organizations in the Panhandle. I'm the niece of Sean T. O'Dair, a Miami-Dade County firefighter paramedic who gave his life in the line of duty. I'm also married to a career professional firefighter paramedic here in the Florida Panhandle. Excuse me. The Second Alarm Project, which is funded primarily through a SAMHSA grant, supports first responder organizations in capacity building for peer support teams, which I would be remiss if I didn't mention right off the bat that peer support is the heart of any resilient first responder organization. We help develop comprehensive behavioral health access programs, also known as BHAPs. We provide behavioral health navigation services, both professional and peer-led, and we provide direct treatment services to first responders and their families. Our services are deeply rooted in the first responder community, and we strive to remain acutely aware of the needs of our first responders and their family members. Our team spends as much time embedded in the first responder communities that we can. For example, we spend significant time with the first responder organization here in Representative Tant's district. Representatives Federhoff and Barnaby, we have also had the pleasure of spending time with first responders in your district as well, and we would be honored to spend time with first responders across the other districts. On a statewide level, I was grateful and humbled to have spent a week embedded with our urban search and rescue teams in Surfside, Florida this past summer after the tragic building collapse of the Champlain Towers. We provided psychological first aid, served as a resource for peer support teams, and worked with our state and local partners, including the University of Central Florida Restores Program and the Florida Firefighters Safety and Health Collaborative, to develop the first statewide disaster mental health plan for first responders post-deployment. I'm here today to show my support for House Bill 25. Thank you to the representative who sponsored that legislation, and appreciation for each of you in hearing this important bill. My recommendations are based on an integration of the best available evidence and our professional expertise working alongside first responders and their family members. Many areas of our state, including much of the Florida Panhandle, right here where we work, are designated as a health provider shortage area for mental health services. For our first responders, and really all Floridians, what this designation means is that proximity and accessibility to a licensed psychiatrist may serve as a major barrier to receiving an accurate and appropriate diagnosis of PTSD, and even greater challenges with accessing life-saving treatment. However, when appropriate, timely diagnoses and linkages to services is accomplished, PTSD in our first responders is highly treatable. That's the good news. For example, our partners with the trauma clinic at UCF Restores have successfully treated 592 first responders with PTSD since 2016. 76% of those first responders leave treatment without a diagnosis of PTSD, so it's highly effective. Again, with this appropriate diagnosis and comprehensive linkages to services, our first responders can heal from this diagnosis. While UCF is centrally located, establishing similar programs in other areas of the state would greatly increase accessibility and take-up rates for our other responders. We are very grateful this bill includes, correctional and probation officers, and do understand that broadening these definitions does come along with necessary consideration of physical impacts. We also know that suicide, and there was a question about this, suicide remains a leading cause of preventable death among our first responders. First responders suffering from PTSD are more likely to both attempt and complete suicide. And substance use and mental health concerns persist as the leading cause of treatable disease and disability among our first responders. As you've heard my colleagues mention, for our local first responder agencies, high turnover, burnout, low morale, and other complex issues directly associated with the stress of the job creates tremendous long-term operational burdens on our local agencies. While currently House Bill 425 does not include public safety telecommunicators, our work with first responders has included these professionals. Our primary data collection from dispatch organizations is in alignment with emerging national data, which shows that dispatchers can and do develop mental health concerns such as PTSD from occupational exposure to trauma. For example, in our work with the local dispatch organizations, upwards of 16% of our 911 telecommunicators had a provisional diagnosis of PTSD, and that is much higher than the general population. Depending on what study you look at, it's either 6% or 3.5%. 10% demonstrated higher risk for suicidal thoughts and behaviors. Our partners with UCF Restores have successfully treated 21 dispatchers for PTSD. I've spent time myself listening to calls received at dispatch agencies. These individuals are exposed to horrendous violent crimes in progress, suicides in progress, homicides, calls involving the death or gravest injury to children, severe human suffering, and many situations I hope to never even experience once in my lifetime. They may experience multiple times over every workday. I also want to mention our team made sure to include dispatchers who handled the calls during the Surfside tragedy. As you can imagine, handling the nature and volume of calls associated with a mass casualty incident is incredibly complex. We're grateful that the Florida legislature has included these telecommunicators in other legislation. As was mentioned, the peer support legislation, Chapter 111.09, does include 911 telecommunicators. So we applaud your efforts in continuing to support the first of our first responders. And two quick final thoughts. We're grateful to see the proposed changes to the educational requirements, which include an emphasis on evidence-based topics, including risk factors, substance use, poor sleep issues, and also protective factors, including connectedness and resiliency. We continue to recommend further standardization in the educational components outlined in the bills, both in the content of the curriculum, but also the requirements for qualification of those delivering the classes to include demonstrated experience and proficiency in working with first responder populations. Lastly, and perhaps most importantly, thank you for your continued emphasis on first responder peer support. Peer support is one of our best and most promising tools in the toolkit for approaching the challenges of first responders. It is evidence-based, trust among responders is already built, and it's readily available before and after every call our first responders run. We appreciate any support from the legislature towards Florida's peer support initiatives. Thank you again for considering this legislation. Your efforts to...
No.
Oh, thank you. I don't know how I hit that. I apologize. Your efforts to strengthen behavioral health resources for our first responders will support Florida's emergency response system, advance mission readiness, preserve the workforce, and improve the long-term health of our first responders, families, and retirees from recruitment to retirement. Thank you.
Thank you, members. Any questions? Thank you for your testimony today.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being here. Okay, we've got Richard Pinsky, 911 emergency dispatchers. You are recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Richard Pinsky. I could say I represent APCO, which is the technical name of the organization, but it's easier to say than I'm one emergency dispatchers. I've represented them for over 12 years now and took them through the initial help create the initial certification, and proud to represent them. I'm not going to go into what they do. They do call us the first responders, because how the calls are taken, that first responder showing up, the call could go south real quickly, or it can really be successful. We are a zero-mistake profession, and that means the tolerance for a mistake in what we do is zero. Because if we make a mistake, it is life and death, not just for the first responders possibly, particularly in law enforcement situations, but when that baby is drowning in the pool, or you just heard some horrific representations of what suicide and other violent crimes are. I do want to touch on a couple of points. First, I want to thank you, Mr. Chairman, because I know that you made every effort to hopefully include 911 dispatchers. I want to thank the bill sponsor, Representative Fisher, also for trying, Representative Wilhite, Representative Trant. We have great champions in the House. Two sessions ago, Representative Wilhite did offer this amendment to just include in the definition a 911 dispatcher in the definition of first responder. Unfortunately, that amendment failed. Craziness of last week of session. Last year, Representative Wilhite introduced it as a bill. Unfortunately, the bill did not get the movement that we were hoping for. So this year, third time's a charm, hope springs eternal. And we were encouraged, and that's why I know the work of several of the members on this committee made every effort they could to be included in this PCS, including the sponsor of the bill of the PCS. So I just want to leave with you the thought that if it is going to happen this session, it's going to be from the folks not just on this committee. Representative Snyder's father knows very well the value of the 911 dispatchers, so we don't have to worry about the value. It is the process that we're dealing with. Representative Fisher did make one comment, which I immediately seized on, and that is over the three-year period. I think he cited the $1.6 million figure. I wish I had $1 million, but in the terms of billions of dollar budget. Well, for the 911 dispatchers, the same amount, and we are far, far fewer in number. So I can only imagine and guess at what that fiscal impact, if it would be just for the dispatchers. If that would what it was for the law enforcement PTSD, statewide over 3 years, I don't think we're talking about, in my opinion, much of a fiscal impact to include them. God bless you. So I just want to leave that thought with you that I don't think it's a fiscal issue. That's for folks on your side of the microphone to worry about and think about. You could think about it. It's just the right thing to do. Is $15 minimum wage the right thing to do? Is this the right thing to do? This is the right thing to do. So thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Great, thank you. Okay, that concludes public testimonies. Members, we are in debate. In debate on the bill. Representative Barnaby, in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to thank the bill sponsor for bringing this bill forward. And also I'd like to note that the testimonies that we've heard from the witnesses this afternoon were, in my opinion, very compelling. And I thank you all for the comprehensive presentations that you gave as to why we need to support this bill, PCS HB 425. So I thank you, Mr. Fisher, and I hope that the rest of my colleagues will see fit to unanimously support this very important measure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hanuschofsky in debate.
Thank you, Chair. This is a really good bill, Representative Fisher. I want to thank you for bringing it forward. I also want to thank Ranking Member Wilhite for his efforts in this. Just the fact that we're talking so much about mental health and trauma and the need for mental health care, PTSD care for first responders is already a great start. We not only need more resources, we do need more first responders taking advantage of these resources. Peer support is great. After the shooting at Stoneman Douglas, I know we had several members of our first responders suffering. And having peer support, having someone who actually understands what the first responders are going through, they can build a level of trust that allows them to work through their trauma in a way that without peer support, it couldn't be done. I listened to all the 911 calls, every single last one of them that came in that afternoon in my community. And for anybody to think that 911 responder operators don't experience trauma on an intense level in their daily work day, I don't know. I challenge everybody to actually go listen to those calls. People seem to think that you have to be in person to experience trauma. You don't have to be in person to experience trauma. You can, listening and going through and knowing on some of these calls that you might be the only person that can help someone from meeting their demise on that call. That's a lot of pressure. And I bring up these personal stories, and I want to commend everybody who came here and spoke, because I keep saying, I say maybe too often, that policy is personal. And if we want to continue to have first responders who are healthy and able to do their job to the best of their ability, able to save lives, then we have to give them the healthy support that they need in order to do that. And so I will support this bill today, and but please add me to your list of fierce supporters that 911 operators get included in this, because I only listen to their calls for one afternoon, and I can't imagine what they go through weekly and annually. Thank you.
Representative Tan, in debate.
I just want to say thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for bringing this bill. Thank you for your communicating back and forth with me over the weekend about it. I can't say it any better than Representative Hemshofsky. I will work with you every stop of the way and every step of the way to see what we can do, how close we can get it, and if we can get our 911 dispatch operators in. I've been talking to my local community's dispatch operators since soon as session was over, about the issues. And so I know what they listen to. I've listened to some of the tapes they've heard, and it's really heart-wrenching. So thank you for being there for our first responders, and I want to work with you to make sure we can honor their service as well. Thank you.
Members, any further debate? Any further debate? Ranking Member Wilhite in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to speak on this very important issue. And I won't make light of it. And Representative Jan Lombardo, I'm sorry if I joked it the other day on some of your issue. It was fitting at the time for the game we played. But I know that your heart's in the right place, and it's a very serious issue that you and Representative Fisher are working on. You know, this type of legislation, as Representative Hunchesky said, is personal. You know, a lot of times we come up here and we debate legislation that one of us thinks is important, or we think it's going to make an impact sometime down the road, or you know, maybe it won't even. Maybe the legislation we put in place doesn't even affect anybody or doesn't matter, and we just think it's important or it's a political position and we want to take it the time. But this type of legislation absolutely changes lives, and it changes generational lives. A first responder that takes their life due to the effects of their job doesn't affect just them. It affects their spouse, their children, their parents. This is a generational problem that we have the opportunity to fix. And so this kind of legislation and real life experiences of folks coming here and speaking certainly has what helped me get through my time in the legislature. And whether it's difficult or good, it is the positive benefits that things like this can make, and is why I'm encouraged to continue doing this job. This is a very good bill. Does it hit every mark? No, we don't always get to eat the whole apple. Sometimes we take a bite out of it at a time. And as I said before, in 2018, we wrote some legislation, and now we're back, and we've tried in the meantime trying to add to it, and we take little bites at a time. And so if we don't get the whole bite, the whole filling of the apple this year, we still take a bite out of it. And this is a good piece of it. you know, anybody that we can include is always going to be beneficial to it, to make sure that we talk about mental health for anybody that's affected. And, you know, there's this discussion about PTS or PTSD, because some don't like to say D as a disorder, that maybe it's not something you're born with. It is an effect that is most likely taken on as the effects of your job. And so this kind of work, and you know, Representative Fisher, you said that the cost, one first responder life isn't worth $1.6 million. It's just, their value of them, as I said the other day, is so much more to the community and their family and the training and the experience that we put in place in them. And so I am so happy to hear this bill, because before, everyone was so worried about the cost of it. You've proven the cost is not going to break the bank for anybody. But what it is going to do is save them long-term money, because if they have to replace that first responder, it's going to cost them a lot more than $1.6 million over 3 years. So I really do appreciate you bringing this good legislation forward. As you know, I've already committed to you and anybody else that wants to work on this, and I will continue to do so as long as I can. But I really appreciate your efforts on this bill, and I am a champion for anything you need. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Members, any further debate? Any further debate? Representative, I want to thank you for bringing this good bill forward. Thank you for your hard work. I think that knowing you for the last 4 years now, you're going to continue working hard on this piece of legislation, and it sounds like you've got a lot of members that are willing to work there with you as well. So we appreciate your efforts here. So with that, you recognize the closer on your bill.
And I'll be brief on my close. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for agreeing to hear the bill, and it was great to work with you, the vice chair, and the ranking member. I know you worked really hard getting the initial bill passed, and the fiscal was always a problem. It's also been great to work with Representative Gian Lombardo, as my bill combines part of his. And as you go back and you look at the history of the bill, I think it was initially assigned like a $20 million fiscal impact. And so we've worked to try to narrow it down to be able to move the ball down the field and to try to help out as many people as we can. So I know some others have tried to say about leaving people out. This is about including people in. And I think my hope is that as I pass this bill forward and it moves on, that others will continue to keep these benefits progressing forward for other people who deserve them. At this point in session, we're week five, right? As sometimes people start saying bills are dying. We have law enforcement officers who are dying. And with this piece of legislation, we have a really good chance of saving more of their lives. This bill has three more committee stops to go through. And so I would ask for you to vote for it and support it today. I'm not sure what the next couple committee stops will ultimately look like, but you have my commitment to continue to work hard to make sure that our first responders and those that support them get the benefits that they deserve. And with that, I close.
Representative Fisher, having closed on the bill, Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair DeSegley?
Yes.
Vice Chair Fetterhoff?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Wilhite? Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Brown?
Yes.
Driscoll?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Gian Lombardo?
Yes.
Haig?
Yes.
Hanshofsky?
Yes.
Koster?
Yes.
Maggard is excused. Rayner is excused. Smith?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Toledo?
Yes.
Zika?
Yes.
The bill passes.
Thank you, members. By your vote, PCS for House Bill 425 will be reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay, members, we will now take up our last bill of the day, House Bill 1001, Trusts, by Representative Beltran. Representative Beltran, you're recognized to explain the bill before we take up the amendment.
Thank you, Chairman. The bill, as drafted, amends Florida's rule against perpetuities for a trust created on or after July 1st of 2022. By extending to 1,000 years the time in which the trust must vest, authorizes a specified financial statement in lieu of an annual trust accounting would not otherwise prohibited by a trust terms, expressly authorizes service of the notice or document by email, which may include the use of a hyperlink or an attached document, and extends the right of a parent to represent or bind his or her unborn or minor child to such child's unborn or minor children in specified circumstances. That is the bill.
Okay, thank you, members. Any questions on the bill? Any questions on the bill? Representative Zika, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair DeSegley, and thank you, Representative Beltran, for this bill. I was reading the bill, and I was just curious, how did you come up with 1,000 years?
Representative Beltran, you recognize.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Rep. Zika, for the question. There are several other states that allow trusts for the 1,000 years, and we wanted to make Florida competitive with those other states.
You're recognized for follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. Are you restricting the future legislatures with the 1,000-year restriction there?
You're recognized to answer that if you'd like.
Thank you, Chair. A future legislature can do whatever it wants. Of course, we can only restrict a future legislature through the Constitution, but we'll see what happens. If they want to take it down, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Ranking Member Wilhite, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative, why would someone that's a beneficiary of a trust even have to know why that they are a beneficiary, or what? Why would they even need an obligation? Isn't that someone's personal wishes to when they're in their trust? I mean, give me an idea why that was even there.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman. I guess you raised two issues. One is that the beneficiaries shouldn't necessarily know that they are going to be the beneficiary unless the settlor, that is the person who puts the money up for the trust, wants them to know, because you wouldn't necessarily want your 18-year-old or something to know they're going to come into X million dollars that may reduce their ambition or their incentive to go out and make their own way in the world. So I believe that should be kept private if the settlor wants to keep it private. And then a second part of your question is you don't want the outside world necessarily to see your family's financial affairs either. So that those are, I guess, two of the animating purposes of the bill.
Thank you. Members, any other questions? Okay, Representative Beltran, you're recognized to explain Amendment Number 1.
Thank you, Chairman. Based on the feedback from the real property probate and trust law section of the bar, we've narrowed the scope of the bill. The amendment reduces the applicability of certain sections to just trusts for which a family trust company, licensed family trust company, or foreign licensed family trust company serves as the trustee. These sections relate to the mandatory annual accountings, sending of notice or documents by electronic message, and the financial statement form accountings that now apply only to such trusts.
Okay, members, any questions on Amendment Number 1? Seeing none, any public testimony? No public testimony. Members, any debate? Any debate on Amendment Number 1? Seeing none, Representative Beltran, you recognize to close on the amendment.
Waive close, Chairman.
Okay, any objections to the amendment? Without objection, show the amendment adopted. Okay, members, we are now in questions on the bill as amended. Any questions on the bill as amended? Seeing none, any public testimony? No public testimony. Members, any debate on the bill as amended? Any debate on the bill as amended? Seeing none, Representative Beltran, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Waive close, Chairman. Thank you.
Representative Beltran having waived close on his bill, Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair DeSegley?
Yes.
Vice Chair Fedahoff?
Yes.
Ranking Democratic Member Wilhite? Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Brown? Driscoll?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Jill Lombardo?
Yes.
Haig?
Yes.
Ponchofsky?
Yes.
Coster?
Yes.
Maggard is excused. Rayner is excused. Smith?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Toledo?
Yes.
Zika?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Members, by your vote, House Bill 1001 will be reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Committee.
Okay, members, if there is no further business, that concludes our agenda for today's meeting. Representative Barnaby moves, we rise, and without objection, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.